Hi everyone, it's Nancy asking you to do us a big favor and leave us a review on iTunes. iTunes reviews help us grow and reach more listeners. We'll even send you a cool thank you gift when you message us with a link to your review. Also, we have a limited number of opportunities available for sponsorship of Season 2 of the podcast, which is scheduled to begin this spring. If you're interested in sponsoring the show, send an email to producer Dan Bird at dan@brainybirdmedia.com. And that's spelled B-R-A-I-N-Y-B-Y-R-D, Bird with a Y. We're already hard at work researching and writing Season 2, and I promise you it is going to be amazing. Like most Americans, you believe that you've experienced some sort of paranormal phenomena. According to LiveScience.com, a website that examines science and contemporary belief systems, 71% of Americans believe their lives have been touched by the paranormal. 56% believe that ghosts are the spirits of dead people. And 21% of us still believe in witches. And I'm not talking about modern practitioners of witchcraft religions, but actual flying, shape-shifting, familiar-owning witches with evil intentions. That means that out of a population of about 320 million people, over 67 million Americans believe that witches, the way they were perceived in Salem in 1692, are real. Still, at 21%, the U.S. is actually on the low side compared to much of the rest of the world. And unlike Africa, India, Saudi Arabia, and other places, we're not currently engaged in literal hunts for witches. Welcome to Witch Hunt. I'm your host, Nancy Matus Bird. This episode is our Season 1 finale, and we'd like to thank our sponsor, Salem Historical Tours, the most recommended walking tour in Salem, Massachusetts. Offering daily history tours and nightly Haunted Footsteps ghost tours, Salem Historical Tours guarantees that you'll experience the best of Salem's rich history in a fun, informative, and entertaining way. All of the guides are licensed and total history nerds like me, so you know you're getting the real facts when you take a tour with Salem Historical Tours. Book your tour online today at salemhistoricaltours.com or give them a call at 978-745-0666. The modern witchcraft hysteria is weirdly anomalous. On one hand, it bears striking similarities to the events of Salem, or even to the great European witch hunts of the 1640s and 1650s, when many thousands were ostracized, tortured, and even put to death. For one thing, the type of accusations is similar. A neighbor is accused of using magic to sicken cattle after a dispute. An elderly widow is deemed a witch when someone falls ill or fails to prosper in business. Children are believed to be targeted by older witches for recruitment because they're supposed to have access to greater magical power. But Western organizations that monitor and address violence committed in the name of hunting witches have adopted a careful, more measured approach than the Inquisitioners of the past. The Puritans of Salem Village believed in the invisible world, but for them, it was to be feared and battled. Today, investigators are careful to distinguish between a cultural belief in witchcraft and hunting down widows accused of witchcraft, pouring acid on them, and hanging them. In other words, it's okay to believe in witches as long as you don't do anything about it. In recent years, Africa has seen an enormous resurgence in witchcraft accusations and executions. Studies show that, like in centuries past, witchcraft accusations increase during times of political disarray and economic hardship. The African country of Nigeria is one of the most frightening examples of how political and economic meltdown have triggered a staggering resurgence in witchcraft accusations. Over the past 40 years, Nigeria has earned a reputation as one of the most violent and economically corrupt places on earth. According to globalsecurity.org, a group that monitors violence and economics around the world, Nigeria has one of the highest rates of internal violence on earth. Between 1999 and 2006, over 50,000 people were killed in ethno-religious violence and over 80,000 displaced. Part of the conflict stems from a collision between growing evangelical Christian churches and an upsurge in equally fundamental Islam. However, much like the schism between the early Catholic Church and the Protestant Reformation, both entities maintain deeply entrenched belief in and fear of witches. Few people represent the modern witch hunter better than Helen Ukbayo, an evangelical preacher from Nigeria who heads up the controversial Liberty Foundation Gospel Ministries. Ukbayo and others like her exploit existing cultural beliefs in witchcraft. Preachers profit by offering to exorcise the demons from afflicted children, often at prices that exceed what the family of the child makes in more than a year. Children who are sent to live at ministries for exorcism can be subjected to isolation, beatings, starvation, and severe psychological abuse. Ukbayo, who was recently banned from entering the UK on child protection grounds, is most famous for her straight-to-video movies that bring to life the worst superstitions and fears about African witchcraft. Ukbayo's most famous film, End of the Wicked, features dramatic depictions of spectral affliction, this idea that a witch can send her spirit or specter out to torment victims. Is the same idea that resulted in witchcraft accusations and executions in Salem. In the 17th century, evidence of the magical world depended on the credibility of testimony. A teenage girl claimed that she could see the specter of an accused witch, and people believed her. In 1999, when End of the Wicked was produced, special effects made it possible for audiences to see actors representing the specters or spirits of the witches leaving their bodies and setting out on a course of destruction. It's actually a really easy special effect to create an out-of-body experience scenario by freezing a frame of video, stretching it, and then overlaying it with another series of video frames that you've made slightly transparent. I learned how to do it with my video camera after watching a 3-minute and 5-second video tutorial on the internet. But to impoverished rural audiences with little to no experience with technology, the film's ghostly witch apparition sequences were powerful imagery that cemented and fueled existing beliefs and fears of witches. In rural villages of Nigeria, the best case scenario for a child accused of being a witch is to be banished from the village. Children, some as young as 4 or 5, are abandoned, basically chased out of town after being accused of witchcraft. If they're lucky, they end up at one of the few relief organizations that provide safety and refuge. The worst-case scenario has seen hundreds, if not thousands, no one really knows the count, of children brutally tortured in ways that I am not comfortable describing, and then executed. Ghana is about 700 miles west of Nigeria. In the northern savannas of Ghana, for more than a century, witch camps have become home to thousands of mostly older women who've been accused of practicing witchcraft. Often, fleeing to a witch camp is the only way an accused, friendless, penniless widow can survive. Witch camps are said to have come into existence when village chiefs decided to establish isolated safe areas for the women. 3 years ago, Ghana's government vowed to shut down the camps and take steps to reintegrate the women into society. At that point, there were 6 camps. Today, there are 5. In addition to proclaiming that he can cure AIDS with a combination of herbs and bananas, Gambia's president Yahya Jammeh became obsessed in 2009 with the idea that there are witches in his tiny country, which is just northwest of Ghana. To root out alleged witches, Jama instructed officials to roam the countryside, rounding up hundreds of villagers and forcing them to drink a witch-finding potion, which made them terribly sick and gave them hallucinations. More than 3,000 miles to the east of Gambia is Tanzania, where the invisible world exists in conflict. On one hand, more than 600 mostly elderly women have been murdered as witches over the past few years. But on the other hand, those born with the genetic disorder of albinism are in danger of being kidnapped, murdered, and dismembered because their body parts are believed to contain magical qualities. Albinism causes a reduction in melanin, which colors skin, hair, and eyes. Witch doctors use the body parts of albinos as part of their cures and treatments. I'm going to pause here for a moment to thank our sponsor, Salem Historical Tours, for supporting the podcast. When you're planning your trip to Salem, Massachusetts, and I hope you will, be sure to treat yourself to one, two, or all of Salem Historical Tours' fabulous walking tours. Salem Historical Tours offers fascinating daily history tours and fun, spooky, haunted footsteps ghost tours. Book your tour online at salemhistoricaltours.com or give them a call at 978-745-0666. Now back to the podcast. Unlike Nigeria, where children have become primary targets, India's modern witchcraft hysteria maintains the status quo of traditional witch hunts. Investigations by the Times of India National Crime Records Bureau and the Mint newspaper found that between 1991 and 2012, as many as 2,100 women were murdered after being accused of witchcraft. The real numbers are undoubtedly much higher. Like Africa, many cases of alleged witches being murdered go unreported because they occur in remote rural areas beyond the reach of most data-gathering agencies. With its deeply entrenched caste socioeconomic system, it makes sense that the vast majority of those accused in India are, like the first victims in Salem 1692, poor, unpopular women who, in India, are almost always member of the lowest caste of society. Sudden illnesses and crop failures do figure in many witchcraft accusations, but there are often other forces at work when a woman is accused of sorcery and executed. Accusing a woman of witchcraft is a handy way to rid the village of a widow whose land you want, or a woman who perhaps has spurned unwanted sexual advances. Rakesh Singh of the Indian Social Institute wrote, quote, "Witch hunting is essentially a legacy of violence against women in our society. For almost invariably, it is low-caste women who are branded as witches. By punishing those who are seen as vile and wild, oppressors perhaps want to send a not-so-subtle message to women. Docility and domesticity get rewarded. Anything else gets punished," end quote. In the remote eastern Indian state of Jharkhand, where 54 women were executed for witchcraft in 2013, local laws have been passed that include fines and jail time for engaging in witch hunting. However, there's no general law in India that protects potential victims of witchcraft accusations or which punishes those for engaging in witch hunts. Whereas accused witches in India are subjected to vigilante violence, prosecuting accused witches is law in Saudi Arabia. In fact, in 2009, Saudi Arabia established its anti-witchcraft unit, a special department inside law enforcement specifically tasked with enforcing religious-based anti-witchcraft laws. Today, new recruits in Saudi Arabian law enforcement programs receive 5 days of training on how to recognize sorcery at work and what police tactics to engage when combating a witch. Within 2 years of forming the Special Witch Hunting Task Force, Saudi Arabia had processed at least 586 cases of alleged sorcery. You wouldn't expect to find similarities, but Saudi Arabia in 2017 is similar to Salem, Massachusetts in 1692. Like the Massachusetts Puritans, Saudi Arabians are governed by a religious theocracy. There are executive and legislative branches of government, but everything is directed by fundamental religious beliefs. In Salem, Massachusetts, a religious adherence to Christian Calvinist Protestantism directed all decision-making. In Saudi Arabia, society is governed by strict adherence to a fundamentalist interpretation of Islam's Holy Quran. In Africa and India, those accused of witchcraft typically hail from within the community. In Saudi Arabia, foreign workers are particularly vulnerable to witchcraft accusations. And like Salem, many of those involved in witchcraft accusations in Saudi Arabia are domestic servants, impoverished young women living far from home. Compounding the problem is the fact that many of the foreign workers are not fluent enough in Arabic to defend themselves in court, much like Anne Goody Glover, who was convicted and executed for witchcraft in Boston in 1688. Glover, a native of Ireland, spoke only Gaelic and was unable to communicate her innocence to the judges. But one important difference between Salem and Saudi Arabia, it should be noted, is that in Salem, it was the poor orphaned women working as domestic servants doing the accusing. In Saudi Arabia, those same type of women are being accused. Adam Kugel, a Middle East researcher at Human Rights Watch, told the Daily Beast in 2014, quote, "In many cases, a domestic worker from rural India or Bangladesh or wherever might bring along a folk heirloom, something that is perceived by the Saudi host to be an object of witchcraft. In other situations, the accusation arises as a countercharge. The domestic worker has tried to charge her employer with some kind of mistreatment, withheld wages, say, or sexual assault. In turn, the employer accuses her of being a witch," end quote. With one of the highest summary execution rates in the world, being accused of practicing witchcraft is a serious and terrifying experience in Saudi Arabia. In 2016, Saudi Arabia rang in the new year by executing at least 100 people in the first couple of months. This included a record-setting one-day mass execution on January 6, 2016, in which 46 people were killed. The most common form of execution in Saudi Arabia is beheading. In a few cases, diplomatic pressure from home countries has resulted in the commutation of sentences of foreign workers, and they're allowed to return home. Nowhere does the ancient belief in witches seem to be more universal than in Papua New Guinea, where it is estimated that 95% of its 7 million people believe in witches. Papua New Guinea is located in a remote region of the Pacific Ocean north of Australia, and while it's still an incredibly poor, mostly rural country, the International Monetary Fund recently classified it as a developing country with a strong mining industry. Papua New Guinea had the sixth fastest growing economy in the world in 2011. The country also has a centuries-old tradition of hunting down and burning women accused of witchcraft. According to reporter Kent Russell, writing for the Huffington Post, no one is sure how many alleged witches are killed in Papua New Guinea every year. While the country's Constitutional and Law Reform Commission recently estimated the number at 150, the United Nations disputed that number, reporting that more than 200 executions take place every year in just one of Papua New Guinea's 20 provinces. In 2013, the Papua New Guinean legislature repealed its 1971 Sorcery Act, which was heavily criticized by human rights advocates for legitimizing witch hunts. But it hasn't appeared to do much to mitigate the proliferation of witch hunts in this country, where disease is rampant and the average life expectancy is 20 years lower than the developed world. Like in Salem more than 300 years ago, alleged witches are blamed for illness and death. It makes it almost impossible to change the mindset when the entrenched belief in Papua New Guinea is that no one dies of natural causes unless they die from old age. Before she was hanged for witchcraft in Salem on September 22, 1692, 58-year-old Mary Easty wrote a letter to the judges who'd sentenced her to death. In her letter, Easty, who was the younger sister of Rebecca Nurse who'd been executed that July, asked the judges to do the one thing that it is impossible to do in the tempest that is a witch hunt. She asked them to slow down. She asked them to take more time to examine and consider the evidence. We don't have a complete copy of her letter, but we do know that in it, Easty asked the judges to be more skeptical of spectral evidence and to perhaps question separately the afflicted girls who were appearing as witnesses. Easty was resigned to her fate, and she never questions it or pleads for her life in her letter. She knows who she is, an innocent woman about to be hanged. Rather, she asks the judges to simply take a minute to think about what they're doing so that, quote, no more innocent blood be shed, end quote. The Witch Hunt podcast is written by me, Nancy Matus Bird, and produced by Dan Bird. If you want to help support innocent people being accused and executed for witchcraft today, go to the show notes for this episode on our website, brainybirdmedia.com/witchhuntpodcast. We've posted links to human rights organizations working to help protect innocent men, women, and children accused of witchcraft. Thank you to Cody Dexter for our theme music and to Adam Dreyfuss for our logo. Thank you also to Salem Historical Tours for taking a chance on us and sponsoring the first season of Witch Hunt. Book your fabulous walking tour online at salemhistoricaltours.com or give them a call at 978-745-0666. If you or your company would like to sponsor the podcast, send an email to producer Dan Bird at dan@brainybirdmedia.com. And that's spelled B-R-A-I-N-Y-B-Y-R-D. It's Bird with a Y. You can follow us online at brainybirdmedia.com/witchhuntpodcast, on Facebook at Witch Hunt Podcast, on Instagram at Witch Hunt Podcast, and on our Twitter feed, Witch Hunt Pod. You can also email us at witchhuntpodcast@gmail.com. Again, it would really help us out a lot if you would leave us a review on iTunes, and we'll even send you a thank you gift. Thank you to everyone who's been so supportive of this first season of Witch Hunt. We've been incredibly lucky to talk to some amazing writers and historians, and we are so grateful to everyone who gave so generously of their time and talent to help us realize this dream of creating a podcast about the history of scapegoating. We're already working on season two and have some cool things planned to help keep in touch with our wonderful listeners during the next few months. So follow us online, send us an email, keep in touch. Hope to hear from you.